Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the ABCs, Authors Between the Covers. What makes successful authors tick? What does it take to sell that manuscript? Is self-publishing a good option? Or is selling your book to a big publishing house still the only way to fly? What about keeping up with your first big success? We'll talk about all this and more on today's show, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World, and PR Rules, The Playbook. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network. We are here today with Harvard lecturer Erica Arielle Fox, author of the brand new book, Winning From Within, A Breakthrough Method for Leading, Living, and Lasting Change. Welcome to the Authors Between the Covers show, Erica.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
First, let's tell the audience a little bit about you and your background. Erica is a lecturer on law at Harvard Law School and the president of Mobius Executive Leadership with her sister, Amy Fox. She's a thought leader who combines the deeply human aspects of negotiation with the best practices of leadership development. Her research and teaching combine timeless wisdom, depth, psychology, neuroscience, and contemplative practices with practical problem-solving advice. This creates leading change frameworks for negotiating complex problems, whether in running organizations or succeeding in the negotiations of daily life, and that is most definitely something we can all use. Erica's professional services firm, Mobius Executive Leadership, is a coaching, training, and leadership development company. Erica received her undergrad degree with honors from Princeton, her law degree with honors from Harvard Law, and there she has taught since 1996. So let's talk about Winning From Within. I'm telling you, Erica, this is destined to be a bestseller. There is no doubt about it. And in fact, some of your mentors have included Roger Fisher, William Lurie, and Bruce Patton, who wrote Getting to Yes, which is, you know, seminal work. And then they went on to publish Difficult Conversations along with Doug Stone and Sheila Heen. So you come from incredible stock. So let's talk about this book. First of all, what is the goal of the book?
Well, first of all, thank you for that incredibly generous introduction. The goal of the book at the end of the day is to help people achieve breakthroughs in situations where they have felt really stuck. I gave a talk a couple of months ago to a bunch of Harvard Business School alumni, business people who'd been out of school for probably 25 or 30 years. And I got an email after the talk from one of the people saying, I wanted to thank you. I had a conversation in the car with my wife, and I was using the principles you talked about, and we cleared up some issues that we haven't been able to resolve for 10 years.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, that's the goal of the book. I mean, to help people cut through situations where they're really stuck, and in many cases, whether it's in business or in personal life, where people have been stuck for years, because it opens up the possibility of changing your habits and exploring new possibilities for how you interact with people.
And that's incredible. I mean, all of us, no matter what our education, experience, background, profession, we all need guidance like that. And I think a framework and tools to be more effective in everyday life.
Yeah, and I if I could add one thing, I would also say, which is a funny paradox, the goal of the book in some ways is to help people change and at the same time to be at peace with who they are. You know, where you are in your life today, you're doing your best, it's okay. I mean, I saw an article, I think it was in People magazine last week, I don't know if you saw it, about Oprah talking about feeling like a failure because the OWN network didn't have a huge first year. And I thought Oprah Winfrey is one of the most successful business people of our time. She was a top talk show host for 25 years. And even after all of that, she tried something and it didn't work out that well. And she's described as having almost a nervous breakdown and feeling totally insecure and worthless. And it broke my heart. I just thought, oh, my God, how hard it is for any of us to just accept who we are. We're good enough. It's okay. So I think part of my hope in the book is that to the extent that we all have parts of ourselves we really don't like, maybe parts of ourselves we hate, we think that's our bad side or our bad self, that we can let that go and just accept we are all a work in progress.
Amen to that, sister. I think that's exactly right.
Isn't that sad about Oprah? I don't know if it's true, but that's what the magazine said.
It is sad, and I think that we have such high expectations for ourselves. So, you know, that they're unrealistic often, and they don't necessarily make sense. So let's talk about the book and how we can fix that within our own psyche and vibrate it out. So in part one, you talk about creating lasting change. And in it, the first section talks about uncovering your performance gap. What is a performance gap?
The performance gap is the difference between what you know you should do in theory, because you learned it in a class or read it in a book, and what you actually do in your real life. So even a week ago, I was at dinner with my husband at home, and he was telling me something, and I knew that someone was going to get back to me about something important. And I pulled out my phone while he's talking. Under the phone, I was just quickly checking my email, hoping he wouldn't notice. Now, I perfectly well know that's bad behavior, and that's not going to help my relationship, but I did it anyway. So, and of course, you know, had bad results. So the gap is every time we know better, but we do something else, and then we fall into the same traps and, you know, create the same havoc over and over again. That's what I'm trying to help people stop doing. If you know what best practice is, how do you actually use it in practice?
That makes perfect sense. So what should you have done differently? Obviously not checked your phone.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, jumps ahead a little in terms of the last part of the book. But we do all have the capacity to see ourselves in action. And we don't use it all the time. We're more often going to lay in bed at night thinking, oh, God, I shouldn't have done that. I wish I hadn't done that. But we do have a capacity, I call it your inner lookout, to see ourselves in action and make a choice in the real moment to do something skillful rather than to do something destructive and regret it later. So I wish I had called on my lookout to wave a flag and say, is it really more important to check this email than, you know, to show my husband that I'm listening? And had I had that momentary perspective, I think I would have listened and I wouldn't have turned my attention away to my phone.
That's so interesting. And that gets to the second section in part one, discover your inner negotiators. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. I think everybody has some experience of a tug of war in themselves. You know, you're trying to save money, but then you see something fabulous and it's expensive, but it's on sale. You know, should you buy it? Should you save? Any kind of opportunity you have where your heart tells you one thing and your head tells you something else. You want to take a risk, but you know it's not practical. You know, there's these voices in our heads that are tugging on us in different directions. And after all the training I've had in teaching negotiation, and as you referred to, the incredible teachers and mentors that I had in this field, I came to see that thinking of these different sides of ourselves as inner negotiators is very helpful, because actually they act almost like individual negotiators. They have different styles, different preferences, different values, and if you see them that way, you can actually start to have a lot more purpose and control over your choices and actions.
It's so fascinating. So how does this apply to business? If you are an entrepreneur and you own a company, how do you work with your inner negotiators every day?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, you know, you have to make decisions every day. And sometimes you could just feel yourself in the inner conflict and you just don't know which way to go. You know, should you take investment money and give away equity? Should you not? Should you get a loan? You know, that has its own risks. Should you take on partners? Should you go it alone? When should you get your own office? Stop, you know, working at home? You have to make decisions, and different parts of you will tell you different things. They'll point you towards different answers. And having a way to see this as a real negotiation where you can hear each voice and its perspective and have a way to essentially orchestrate an inner conversation and come to resolution, you can move forward with purpose and clarity and confidence in a way that I found is relatively unique. And the process is not that different from the way you would do the same thing with other people. It's just a process within yourself of identifying different interests, different perspectives, and, you know, looking for a way to create the best outcome for as much as possible for all concerned.
Makes perfect sense. So, and that brings us to the next part, which is work with the big four. What are the big four?
So there are hundreds of, you know, sides of ourselves, and there's different wonderful frameworks. Voice dialogue is one of them. Internal family systems is another, that try to name different parts within human beings. I focused on four because I think that's manageable, and I found them most universal, meaning I teach people all over the world, and I find them very consistently showing up with people. So that's the dreamer, the visionary part of you that fuels your innovation and is driven by intuition. The thinker, who is more analytical, rational, works on reason and logic and helps you solve problems. The lover, who is fueled by emotion and helps you build trust and manage relationships, also helps you to communicate clearly. And the warrior, which is the part of you that can get things done, that takes action. And in a workplace, that often has to do with telling hard truths or taking a stand for your values and not backing down. But it's the part of you that can really take action, and it's driven by willpower more than anything else. Those are the big four, the dreamer, thinker, lover, and warrior, and they show up in everybody.
So interesting. And I know everyone can identify with that. So how does it work? Do you have one that's predominant or two or...
Well, my experience over 15 or 20 years of working with many thousands of people is that most people have tendencies, what I call your profile, your big four profile. That means there are one or two they're very comfortable with, they're very good at, they come naturally. There's usually one of the four people feel neutral about. They can speak from that voice or, you know, use those skills or not. And at least one, if not two, that people really don't want to use at all. You know, so when I talk to some business people, they'll say, lover, you know, not me, you know, ask my employees. Or, oh, my husband doesn't think I have a thinker. You know, he sees me reading the horoscopes. So people will discount parts of themselves, not take them seriously, or just not find a way to relate to them. But it's not the case that because you're a business person, you don't have an inner lover. And it's not the case that because, you know, you like reading horoscopes, you don't have an inner thinker. You may not be calling on them as much as you could, but that does not mean that they're not there in you as potential.
Mm, that makes perfect sense. And that takes us to part two, which is balance your profile. You talk about policies, possibilities, perspectives, people, and performance. Can you talk a little bit about each of those?
Yeah. I mean, the most effective leaders and the way to be most effective in your life would be to have a balance of these different attributes. And as I said, since most people really identify with only one or two, they haven't yet figured out how to call all of them into balance. So if you're an entrepreneur, you might have a very strong dreamer. You have a big sense of direction and vision, and you start doing all sorts of things and making all sorts of plans, but if your thinker isn't getting out an Excel spreadsheet and, you know, calculating dollars and cents, you could have beautiful grand visions but not be able to pay for any of it. Or if you think of Steve Jobs, for example, obviously a brilliant visionary, a brilliant creative, but people have said about him that he was incredibly difficult to work with. He had very low lover skills. He was very tough on his people. So nobody is perfect. But the best leaders actually know how to balance all four domains. You can get things done, relate to people, take many different perspectives, and have a real sense of open possibility.
Mm. I love that idea. And you can definitely see it, what strengths are rising to the top in other people and in yourself.
Yeah, and by the way, people sometimes make assumptions about men and women. Like, you know, these are the ones that tend to be strong in men, and these are the ones that tend to be strong in women. That's not my experience. I think it's very individual how any one person's profile is going to show up, which ones are strong, which ones are less well-developed. And that's why it is an individual journey for each person.
Right. So let's tease this out a little bit more. So the possibilities, see your dreamer's vision. Can you give us an example of that?
Well, last week we were commemorating Dr. Martin Luther King, who had the signature line of the inner dreamer, I have a dream. That's a person who can mobilize massive social change by getting people aligned with their vision. And that's a historical example, but I was thinking actually today about Jeff Bezos, who just took over the Washington Post, and thinking this is a person who sees a world of open possibility. And he probably will do really creative, innovative things with the Washington Post that will seem very out of the box to most of us. But he lets his dreamer lead.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'm a big fan of his and the Washington Post. So.
I guess part, it's pretty scary for the people at the Post. I mean, it's he doesn't dream small.
I don't know. I suspect the journalists I know who are there are ready for some shakeup. A lot of them have left. All the veteran journalists who I've known for decades have gone. They've taken the buyout or whatnot. So it'll be interesting.
Well, that's actually it's a nice point that you make, because one of the real power skills of the dreamer is inspiring people. And when I get asked to come in and coach people on inspirational leadership, it's often that they've really shut down their inner dreamer, and therefore people working with them don't feel inspired. They don't see the vision. They don't see the future. So they exit, exactly as you're saying. Hmm. And a visionary is very good at lifting people up and energizing them with a vision.
Yeah, which is thrilling for, I think, for everybody in the organization. And hopefully that's a trend that will continue as more people feel inspired themselves and they have this mindful experience. So let's talk about the next one, perspectives. Understand your thinker's insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is just your ability to think things through clearly, to take a sort of analytical approach to the situation that's in front of you. So I think about Larry Summers and Janet Yellen are now the final contenders to be the new Fed chair. That's because whatever else you think about them as leaders, they have competent inner thinkers. So people respect their ability to look at data, look at massive amounts of information, evaluate it, and make complex policy decisions because they've got good internal thinkers. And as I say, that may not actually be enough to make either one of them the right candidate, but that's a different conversation. But that's they're people whose inner thinker is very strong.
That makes sense, especially for that job.
Exactly.
Talk about feeling with your lover's heart. What does that mean in terms of business?
It means embracing emotional intelligence, which is an idea that's been around for a long time. And what I have found, especially in the last 5 years, is that top professional services firms in every sector, I won't name them all, in the public sector and in the private sector, are getting feedback from clients that they respect their judgment. For example, they think they're good thinkers, they're management consultants, bankers, accountants, but they don't trust them personally. And more very senior business people are trying to develop the capacity to be a trusted advisor. How do I earn my clients' deep trust? Not just that they think I have sound judgment, but they experience I care about them. And I'll be there for them if the economy tanks. And the lover skill set is becoming increasingly essential for leaders in business. If people don't feel that sense of care, that sense of trust, that feeling that you believe in them at a personal level, they'll go find an advisor they do trust.
It's the same. The same is true for a publicist or an attorney. I think, we're not willing to sacrifice what we need deeply down inside anymore in exchange for something like money or, somebody telling us how to behave.
I think for a long time, pure technical competence was valued above everything else. And people were willing a long time ago to say, well, it just doesn't matter, as you say, whether my publicist or my lawyer, it doesn't matter. They're not my therapist. Right? I mean, the kind of caring relationship and counseling skills were just siloed into mental health professionals and educators, but that is absolutely not true today. I cannot tell you how often I meet with senior business people who have multi-million-dollar deals on the table hanging in the balance because they don't have the skills to bring the people together behind the deal. And they're, dying to get some help because they're watching incredible value about to be destroyed. Even though economically the deal is good, they don't know how to align human beings and to hear them and to understand their concerns and understand how to bring them together. If you don't know how to deal effectively with people, which is the fundamental skill set of the inner lover, you're going to hit a wall in business. Absolutely.
Which is good news for people who are empathetic and they want to care.
It is. They want to be cared for, actually. Yeah? That's right. It is.
Yeah. So let's talk about this fourth of the big four, performance, carrier, warrior, sword, and shield.
Well, the warrior is, you know, it's a symbol that can be associated with combat, but that's not my purpose. Not intended as a military reference as much as a powerful reference, as a part of you that can get things done, that can take action, you know, that will stay up until the report is done because you promised it to your client. And in the work context, I think the warrior skills come into play when you have to tell a hard truth, when you have to give tough performance feedback and your lover is saying, ah, I don't want to hurt this person. And your inner warrior is saying, give the person the hard truth because they need to get better or they're going to lose their job, right? It's the part that helps you stand up for your values at a meeting when you disagree with people so you don't go home at night and think, I really didn't agree with that discussion, but I sat there and said nothing. Mm. So it gives you a sense of resolve, a sense of courage and strength, you know, to make some tough calls and to implement and execute. I think, you know, in different professions, the warrior has slightly different expressions, but fundamentally it's about getting things done and hanging in there until things are done and done well.
It sounds like under all of this wisdom is just this sense of bringing stuff that's bubbling down beneath the surface up to the surface, making it conscious and thoughtful and mindful so that you behave properly in your life and that you grow as a human being and that you're as effective as possible.
Yeah, although I would put a slight caution, which is you can't just let everything you wish you'd ever said, you know, bubble up to the surface and then just go forth and say it. You know, all of your buried comments you wish you had made to your colleague or the things you wish you had said to your sister. You want to access the parts of you that want to say those things, and then you need to learn the skill to say them well.
Oh, and that's exactly right.
So it's knowing that you have the creativity and that you have the clarity or the compassion or the courage to use any of the big four, and then actually knowing how to do it so that you are skillful.
Absolutely. And those courageous conversations, I think of that all the time. One of my other clients had been talking about that at the Lincoln Leadership Institute held during the Civil War. Courageous conversations weren't had. And so now here we are all these decades later with your wonderful book talking about this. So you're being thoughtful and mindful and not just being, you know, superficial or trying to win, but you're really trying to help everybody move forward. That's what that sounds like to me. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and to do it in a way that's effective, which I think, you know, it's a little bit where the rubber meets the road. I had a client recently, and I was trying to work with him on expressing his emotions. And in my first meeting with him, based on feedback he'd gotten from his direct reports, and I said, you know, I want to talk to you about how to talk about your feelings. And he said, I talk about my feelings all the time. And I asked him to give me an example, and he said, you know, somebody handed me a report, and I looked at it, and I said, I hate that. That's crap. Don't insult me, you know, with this kind of writing. That was me talking about my feelings. And I thought, well, I hear the emotion in what you said, and that's what I mean when I say you need to be able to access the different parts. But as you say, you need a component of mindfulness, you know, to do it well. And you don't want to just focus on building behavior, but you also need to remember that part has to go together with the internal experience. They're both really important.
Absolutely. And that brings us to part three, connect to your core, where you talk about perception, presence, and path. Can you discuss a little bit of that?
Yes. And this is the idea that the big four are your sort of building blocks, you know, they're inner negotiators that are operating in these four core domains every day. But you have, if you think of those as almost inner executives, the equivalent of your own inner board of directors, these are parts of you that are watching out for the big four, just as we're talking about right now, enabling them to be skillful and wise and purposeful. So I mentioned one at the beginning, the lookout, which is helping you notice in the moment what you're doing. So if I draft an email to someone and I'm venting and telling, you know, all my angry thoughts, I think we've all had the experience of a little bit of a voice saying, maybe I should save or delete rather than hit send. and, you know, come back to this email a little bit later. That's the lookout that's waving a flag saying, before you do something you're going to regret, maybe this is not the best way to go. So you have a mindful capacity that I am saying lives in your lookout. The lookout is observing what you're doing, but not necessarily directing what you'll choose to do next. That is the captain's role, the inner captain. So I think about it, if the big four are passengers on a boat, the captain is at the helm. And that's really you. That's your ability to hear, my lover is saying I shouldn't give the feedback. My warrior is saying I should give the feedback. My captain is going to come in and weigh those different perspectives, and then my captain will make the best decision possible. So that you're leading, not any one of the big four. Your captain has the ability to hear all the big four and then try to make a wise decision. And the last piece of that trio is the voyager, which is really just the part of you that's growing and developing over the course of your life. It's the part of you that learns and changes and aspires to be in a different place 5 or 10 years from now in your life than you are today. And we're all changing and growing all the time. And that's the sort of, you know, the way we travel down the road of life.
Oh, I absolutely love that. So tell us, this is our last question, because I know you need to run. Where do you want to see winning from within 5 years from now?
Well, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, I would say, when Daniel Goleman first came out with emotional intelligence, it was a new and a somewhat radical idea, you know, that our intelligence was more than our IQ. And 15 or 20 years later, it's a basic competence in all management courses, leadership courses, in marriage. You know, we all want to have emotional intelligence. And I think coming out with the idea that we're not just one unified us, you know, there's a multiplicity inside of us. We have inner negotiators. We need to learn how to harness them and use them differently. That's a new idea. That's not going to strike people as obvious right, you know, out of the gate. But 15 or 20 years from now, I would wish that people could just in normal conversation say, you know, I got stuck because my lover got away with me and I started yelling and I regret that. Or, you know, my thinker was taking a nap and I didn't think it through and I didn't manage the risk. I did something reckless and I'm going to really work on thinking things through more carefully so that these ideas can just enter the popular culture. People can use them as a shorthand with each other. They can use them to define their own personal and leadership development paths. And they just become tools that, you know, everybody finds very normal and comfortable to use, because quite like emotional intelligence, I have a strong sense that these 7 components will give a guide to people, you know, how they operate on the inside that can be enormously empowering and really life-changing. So that's my wish.
I love it. I am sure that wish will come to fruition, because we all need that kind
amen
of guidance.
And amen.
Yeah. So thank you, Erica, for being here on the Incandescent Radio Network.
Thank you, Hope. I look forward to seeing you in 15 or 20 years when everybody's talking about their big four.
Yes, and we can say that they heard it here on Authors Between the Covers. We are talking today with Erica Fox, Winning from Within, the breakthrough method for leading, living, and lasting change. And before we let you go, tell us how people can get this book.
Oh, well, that's a great question. The book is available now, actually, at not in bookstores yet, but online. So, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, you can pre-order it now. It will also be in bookstores on September 24th. But you can get it today, and you can send it to your friends, and I would be really excited if people started to get this book in their hands.
Excellent. Well, we're going to do our best to get it out there, and we will come back and interview you again in less than 15 years so that we can see how this book is progressing. So thank you again, Erica. This is Hope Gives with the Incandescent Radio Network. We'll talk to you soon.
That's it for today's episode of the ABCs, Authors Between the Covers, hosted by journalist and publisher Hope Katz Gibbs, author of Truly Amazing Women Who Are Changing the World and PR Rules, The Playbook. Be sure to check back next week on the Incandescent Radio Network for another interview with a successful author who is happy to share their story. Here's to writing your heart out and keeping your dreams alive. Thanks so much for listening.